to order. We have a quorum present. Just a couple of housekeeping things. First, I would mention that all bills today will be laid over for possible inclusion. And to begin our meeting today, we will turn to Mr. Silvio, who will give us just some brief introductory remarks concerning TIF policy and practice, and then we'll proceed to start paying our bills.
Mr. Chair and members, TIF, or tax increment financing, is an economic development tool that promotes development or redevelopment in areas that it would not otherwise occur. Mechanically, TIF uses the increased property taxes resulting from the development to pay for the development costs. When a district is created, the original net tax capacity and the original tax rate are certified, and as property increases in value, any increases over that original capacity are essentially captured, and the increment is determined by multiplying the original tax rate by that captured tax capacity. The property still pays the underlying property taxes prior to the property entering the TIF, but any increment that is captured is redirected so that that increased tax is not directed to the local taxing jurisdictions, but is essentially redirected back to the development to pay for whatever development costs. Before creating a TIF district, the city must make what is often called a but-for finding, and it's sort of twofold. First, that without the use of TIF, the development would not have occurred, and second, that the market value of the property will be higher than it would be if TIF had not been used. State statute outlines roughly five types of TIF districts. And outlines the requirements to establish each type of district, the duration of each district, and eligible expenditures. The redevelopment districts are 25-year districts, and they are typically certified to eliminate blight conditions, substandard buildings, and the like. Economic development districts are the shortest district. Those are 8-year districts and are typically certified to discourage industries from moving, increasing employment, and preserving the local tax base. Housing districts are 25-year districts, and those are certified to encourage the development of low and moderate income housing. Renewal and renovation districts are 15-year districts, similar to redevelopment districts, but less findings are required. And lastly, soil conditions districts, 20-year districts, certified to develop land with pollutants and other contaminants. Development authorities, cities, port authorities, EDAs, and HRAs are all authorized to establish TIF districts under general law. The only time the legislature and the tax committee specifically will see a proposal for tax increment financing is either if general law change is proposed, there is a proposal from Senator Rest that's making several general law changes, or if a city-specific proposal is brought forward asking for special treatment or exemptions from general law, and those are all the other proposals that the committee is hearing today. Some of the more common requests for special law or exemptions that the committee will see today are exemptions from the blight test. I mentioned the blight test is required for redevelopment districts, and that is that 70% of the area of the district be occupied by buildings, streets, utilities, and more than 50% of the buildings must be structurally substandard. There are instances where a city will ask that a specific parcel be deemed to have met the blight test when otherwise would not. Another common exemption that the committee will see today is a 5-year rule extension. The 5-year rule essentially requires that development activity occur within the first 5 years after certification of a TIF district. And there are instances where a city will ask that that 5-year rule be extended because once the 5-year rule is expired, beginning in the 6th year or when that 5-year rule expires, increment may only be spent to pay off obligations incurred during that first 5-year period. Another exemption that the committee will hear today is an extension of the district duration. I noted that all districts have a statutory duration limit, and there are times where cities will ask that the duration of a TIF district be extended. Whenever the legislature authorizes a city to extend the duration of a TIF district, the city, county, and school district must all approve the duration extension for that to be effective. And lastly, Mr. Chair, the committee will see some requests for a pooling extension or limitation. Pooling is the ability for a TIF district to spend increment outside the boundaries of the district. State statute limits the amount of pooling that can be spent. Redevelopment districts are allowed to spend 25% of increment outside the boundaries of the district. All other type of districts are limited to 20%. And there are instances where cities may request that percentage for pooling be increased or that certain expenditures be deemed in-district expenditures and therefore would not count towards that pooling limitation. Lastly, Mr. Chair, members, the state auditor has the responsibility for the oversight of TIF and TIF districts. Development authorities must file annual reports with the state auditor, and the Office of the State Auditor issues yearly legislative reports with information on TIF districts, the number of districts, location, trends, and whatnot. And that concludes my opening remarks, Mr. Chair, but I'm certainly willing to answer any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. And just for clarification, is there any effect on the general fund for the state in regard with TIF projects? Or is it totally a local effect?
Mr. Chair and members, tax and refinancing is all at the local level, so it would not impact any state funds.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any other questions, members? If not, I told Mr. Sylvia I would ask you to contain yourselves due to the excitement of his information this morning. So, anyway, we then shall begin with our hearing our bills. Senator Nelson, you're first up. The first bill you've asked to hear is 3160. And with that, I will turn the testifiers table over to you. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be with the Property Tax Subcommittee today. Thanks for hearing these bills. The first bill, members, is 3160. This is an economic development TIF bill for the city of Chatfield. This proposal would allow the city to use the Economic Development Authority to establish an economic development district to construct a multi-level hotel. And the first floor of the hotel could not exceed the 15,000 square foot requirement on the first floor. The proposal would exempt the district from some rules regarding the use of increment for economic development districts. Again, this has no impact on the state budget. I have the city administrator, Joel Young, with me to talk about the city of Chatfield, why this is important, maybe a bit of the history. And of course, then Chris Giesen, who is the economic development lead in Chatfield. So I'll kind of turn it over to them. We'll start with Joel.
Thank you, Senator.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. Joel Young, City Clerk, City of Chatfield. Thanks for hearing us today. The proposed hotel that we're talking about is a critical piece of private sector infrastructure that's not in place in our community. The Joy Ridge Event Center and the Chatfield Center for the Arts are two primary draws to Chatfield, in addition to the manufacturers that we draw people to. There's a great need for a place to sleep, quite frankly, in Chatfield that we've been having trouble meeting. The, given that tourism facilities are eligible for TIF financing in most or at least half the development regions in the state, we think this meets the spirit of the current law. And given that the first floor of this building is 13,000 square feet, which is less than the 15,000 square feet limitation, the small city exception, here again, we think this meets the spirit of the law. But it doesn't meet the technicalities of the law, so we appreciate your consideration. With that, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, Mr. Giesen will give you more technical detail.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chris Giesen. I'm the economic development staff for the city of Chatfield. As Joel mentioned, we're asking for an exemption to a small technicality in the square footage that's limited by current law. This bill would specifically be applied to just this project in Chatfield in this location. So this is a one-time, one-look exception. We think in rural Minnesota, especially in our smaller cities, the type of flexibility that's required in economic development. We aren't able to use all the tools all the time, but TIF is one of those tools that makes projects grow rural Minnesota. As Joel mentioned, this is a locally led invested project. Chatfield investors are taking on this $8 million project. This will increase our tax base over the long run. It'll underpin our economic development initiatives, and it's probably one of the highest priorities for development in our community. This is something that will underpin those investments that not only the city but also the state has made in our community.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And also, if you all would maybe pull your microphones ahead just a little bit. Thank you. Mr. Sylvia, would you comment here as to the purpose, an explanation why they're in front of us today again?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, so the purpose of economic development districts are to expand employment, preserve, or enhance local tax base. We typically see economic development districts established for manufacturing, warehousing, research, development, and some tourism facilities. But generally, there is you cannot use economic development TIF for commercial properties or retail properties. But there is what's considered a small city exception, and you can use a TIF for that purpose if the commercial facility is located in a small city, which is defined as a city with a population of 5,000 or less and located within 10 miles or more of a Minnesota city with a population of 10,000 or more. So if the facility is located in a small city and the development is 15,000 square feet or less, then economic development TIF can be used. For purposes of Senate File 3160, as the testifier indicated, the property itself would be greater than 15,000 square feet, so it would not meet that small city exception. So this proposal is asking that for purposes of the multi-level hotel, the 15,000 square feet limitation would be limited to the first floor only. And the proposal does define the first floor as the floor at street level where the public is permitted to enter and exit. So it would be specific to this property. I believe the location also is noted in the legislation, so it would not be open to any other areas of the city.
Okay, very good. Members, questions? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this. Senator Nelson, I'm just wondering if the testifiers could share a little bit more about where people come to Chatfield for the amenities that you're describing. Where are they staying if they're not staying in Chatfield? That's my first question. And my second question would be, can you describe how this fits into the larger thinking that you have for economic development for the community? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Sorry. Thank you, Senator Murphy. Yes, Mr. Giesen will speak to that, and I'll just put a little context out here. Chatfield is what's known as the Chosen Valley, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, quintessential American city, and it does get a lot of tourists from other areas that don't have a place to stay. But I'll let Mr. Giesen speak to that point specifically.
Mr. Giesen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator and Senator. Right now in Chatfield, as Senator Nelson mentioned, we're without hotel accommodations. We have a small bed and breakfast that can rest about eight people. We're right at the gateway to Bluff Country in the Driftless area of southeast Minnesota. Imagine driving up the North Shore, Highway 61, two harbors. We're kind of relative to Duluth. We're kind of in that same position relative to Rochester. We are just finishing the second phase of our Center for the Arts, which is another regional draw. Performances for that are drawing 400-600 people once this will be done. We just don't have anywhere to put tourists, visitors, patrons, and as well as Joel had mentioned, we're having some additional growth in the community that we're just not able to accommodate those overnight stays. So,
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I have been to Chatfield. It is, as you say, a gateway to the Driftless and a lovely place. And I just wanted to understand contextually how this fits into what you are contemplating for the community going forward. I appreciate your answer.
Thank you.
Other members?
Very good. Final comments, Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing this bill very tailored to the needs of Chatfield. And again, I just want to be very clear that the current TIF law would apply if it was a one-story hotel. But it's just the additional stories that... And so that would lead me to my second bill, Mr. Chair, which is maybe looking at that general TIF law as opposed to this one exception.
Very good. With that, Senator Nelson and members, I will lay Senate File 3160 over for possible inclusion, and we will proceed then to Senate File 3159.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So 3159 gets to the reason why we're in front of you here today, which is the current TIF law for a small city such as Chatfield would only allow economic development for a main for that 15,000 square foot of all levels of the building cannot exceed that 15,000 square foot mark. And I spoke with Mr. Sylvia to try and get an understanding about the history about why that limitation is in there. And I'll paraphrase that, and certainly Mr. Sylvia is welcome to ask to add more detail to that. But I did wonder, why is that specification in our general TIF law? And the thought was, so it's for small cities that are 10 miles from another major city. And the idea was, or the thought about perhaps what the intention was behind this current restriction was that, while the economic development piece is so important, particularly in our rural areas, there was perhaps this intent to guard against maybe large big box stores coming in with their large buildings and perhaps putting at risk those Main Street Minnesota businesses up and down our main streets, our local main streets. I don't know if that was the intention. I'm saying that is the result, though. But in this case, when we're talking about a hotel where there are no accommodations, this particular rule is causing a hardship. And I know the city has been looking at this for a number of years, and it was this was just kind of a barrier. And so the second bill, Mr. Chair, 3159, just removes, further describes that square footage limitation to the main floor footage. So it provides maybe a little flexibility going forward regarding TIF in for those small cities.
Good. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Mr. Sylvia, any further comments concerning that issue?
Mr. Chair, members, the only thing I would add is you'll notice the definition of first floor is slightly different in this proposal 3159, the general law change, and that is only because the city-specific Chatfield proposal mentioned the first floor as being the floor at which the public is permitted to enter and exit. For some economic development properties, research development, telemarketing tourism facilities, the general public may not be actually permitted to enter those facilities. So that's why the general law change is simply defining first floor as the floor at first level. Other than that, the mechanics of this bill is the same as 3159. It's just a general law proposal.
Okay. Very good. And I'm assuming if we would adopt 3159, 3160 would become unnecessary at that point.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay. Further questions, members? Very good. Senator Nelson, final comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the good attention today, and we want all of our cities to be able to thrive. Chatfield is one of those beautiful small cities. I hope you can make a trip there, and we hope you have a wonderful place to stay as well. So hope for some positive action here, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Nelson. With that, Senate File 3159 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will proceed to Senate File 3498, Senator Pratt.
Good
So long to tell.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Pratt. Just one housekeeping item. We're having some technical difficulties with our TVs this morning, and so you'll need to follow everything on your computer screen if you haven't already caught that, and apologize for that. But anyway, with that, Senator Pratt, welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Isn't the digital age wonderful?
Yes, it is great.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 3498 creates a tax increment financing district similar to efforts that were done in other communities like Apple Valley and Savage to reclaim a gravel pit that's met at the end of its useful life. And Mr. Chair, I have members from the city of Savage who can explain it much better than I.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'll turn it over to the testifiers. Please introduce yourselves, and you may proceed when ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Reynolds. I'm the city administrator for Shakopee. Mr. Kursky, Michael Kursky, is our director of economic development. One of the benefits of Minnesota and the glaciers that once came here is they gave us all these wonderful deposits of rocks, minerals, and sand. Unfortunately, once we extract them, the useful life of that particular piece of property is pretty much gone. We have a very large hole in Shakopee, and we'd like the ability to have a TIF district established so we can fill that hole through tax increment financing and then make it developable. And Mr. Kursky is going to be able to go in a little more detail about that and what our plans are for the future.
Mr. Chair and committee members,
welcome.
So basically, this is a 150-acre site.
Please identify yourself. For the record.
Michael Kursky, I'm the Director of Planning and Development for the City of Shakopee. Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a 150-acre site, kind of at one of our main commercial corners. Lowe's is right across the street, and it's not been able to be developed. As Senator Pratt mentioned, this particular facility has reached its useful life. And so now we're stuck with an 80-foot hole that is really being surrounded by new development. This bill would allow us to fill that hole. The preliminary estimates are between $8 and $12 million to fill the hole. And then the plan is to do between $200 and $300 million of development. It's a key commercial corner in the city. We have a number of grocers that have looked at that corner, and then we have a number of both apartment developers and single-family developers that are interested in the site. But right now, again, it's a 80-foot deep hole. It's hard to imagine how you would fill that. So this bill would basically give us the community the resources to fill that hole and make it economically viable.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Question for you. With a hole that depth, is obviously there's not enough overburden left to fill that, so you're going to have to haul fill in order to fill that from some other source, I'm assuming.
Mr. Chair and other committee members, they have been hauling in fill and kind of created a berm around it. A lot of people in the community don't realize there's an 80-foot hole there. Unfortunately, when that fill has been brought in, it has to be engineered to put back on the hole. So every lift has to be have an engineer on site and certified if you're going to build homes on it or any other kind of commercial business. So there's a significant amount of material on site. It's just never been engineered.
I see. Very good. Members, any questions? And what is the surface area of that hole, if I might ask?
It's 150 acres.
150 acres.
Yes. It's a big hole.
Yes. You could probably sell tickets as you're filling that one. Very good. Mr. Sylvia, any comments?
Mr. Chair, members, the only comment I would add, based on what Senator Pratt indicated, the language that appears in this proposal, Senate File 3498, is nearly identical to legislation that the legislature passed in 2013 for the city of Apple Valley. And in 2014 for the cities of Maple Grove and Savage.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, and this might be a question for Mr. Sylvia, actually, but one of the provisions of the of 3498 is that the pooling percentage is increased to 80%. And I understand the need to sort of fill this 150-acre hole. Why would we increase the pooling percentage to, you know, to that amount in the same bill? Is that also something that we did in the previous iterations of this?
Mr. Sylvia. Mr. Chair and members, yes, that same item, which is number two in the summary, the pooling percentage increase, was included in the three prior legislations. The percentage is based on you know, the request of the city. I believe the city of Maple Grove in 2014 also requested an 80% pooling expansion. The cities of Apple Valley and Savage, I believe it was a 40%. But I believe based on the size of this location and, you know, because pooling allows increment to be spent outside the district but within the project area, and based on the fact that this might be quite a significant property and project area, I think it probably the request to pool that much was probably based on that.
Very good. Senator Zuzinski.
Mr. Chair, so just out of curiosity, a curiosity question. So I'm assuming it was like Class 5 that was mined out of this over the last several years, and what's going to be put back? It just seems ironic. We made a hole, took out the Class 5, and now we're going to fill the hole again. So can you explain what came out and what's going in?
Mr. Chair and committee members, senators, so that was a combination of Class 5 and smaller aggregate and sand. So there's still some left that they're in the process of hauling out. Most will be brought in stable soils without not a lot of organics. So sand happens to be something that's available in other mines that this mine didn't have. So a lot of sand is available in Minnesota. So some of it will be sand because it can be compacted better.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since Senator Jasinski opened up the dialogue around curiosity, who dug the hole, and where are they now?
Mr. Kursky, would you like to?
Sure, Chair and Senator, so Shakopee Sand and Gravel has been there for more than 50 years. One of the owners has passed away. The other owner really is not interested in moving it forward. You can imagine 50 or 60 years ago when this started, there were not the regulations that there are today. So I think from a community standpoint, we're kind of repairing something that if it was done today, there would have been a lot more regulation around it.
Right. I think today's regulations require those who open the pit have to close it appropriately, if I recall correctly. So,
Chair, that's correct.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Very good. With that, Senator Pratt, final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just to add on to what Mr. Persky and Mr. Reynolds said, you know, growing up as a kid, this pit was kind of outside the city of Shakopee. And the city has developed and grown around it. And this is a very important site for future development. And I hope the committee will include this in its bill.
Very good. Thank you very much. With that, this Senate file 3498 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we'll turn to Senate File 2976, Senator Kent. Welcome to, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Good morning, members. I am pleased to present Senate File 2976 today. Senate File 2976 would authorize a use for some excess increment on an existing TIF and extend the district by 5 years. If granted, this legislation will provide additional resources to assist with our community center, which is known as Central Park. This is a place for learning with programs like ECFE and adult learning. Our library is there. It is attached to our Y. And there's a skyway to a senior living facility just next door, which was what the original TIF was part of the original TIF.
and it's our space for gathering. It is really sort of the heartbeat of Woodbury. So, Mr. Chair, I have with me, I know we have some technical issues, but Mayor Ann Burt is here, and our city administrator, Clint Gridley, also. They'll talk some more about the project.
Okay, very good. First, Mayor Ann Burt from the city of Woodbury, please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed when ready.
Good morning. Yes, I am Mayor Ann Burt here from Woodbury, and thank you, Chair Weber, Senator Kent, and committee members for allowing this testimony this morning. Senator Kent did a beautiful job of explaining this TIF district and how it is connected to our Central Park. And again, the Central Park is our community gathering space. It does connect that senior facility, and that's this TIF district is really this skyway that connects the senior living center into this Central Park, again, gathering space, connecting the YMCA, our school district 833, ECFE, Great Rivers Consortium, and the library. So just a wonderful place for our community. The basic of the TIF 13 is currently established is this. The TIF was established in 2001 as an affordable housing district, and as it currently exists, it's going to sunset in 2026. The senior living facility, it's called Presbyterian Homes, rents 16 of their units in this facility called Stonecrest to low-income families in exchange for the Skyway linkage to our Central Park. Proceeds from TIF 13 are currently established to be used to pay the debt service through 2022 on the Skyway. That's, again, the Skyway is what connects the senior living facility to Central Park, and then to pay the developer a portion of the increment. And as time moves forward, we get more of the proceeds and the developer gets less. Any surplus proceeds from the district, once the debt service is paid off in 2022, may be used only for affordable housing, pooling, or real improvements to the Skyway. The bill as it is proposed gives us two important benefits. It allows us to spend surplus TIF revenues on maintenance as well as facility and infrastructure updates to our Central Park, rather than limiting the revenue to the housing or the Skyway improvements. And it extends the life of the district by 5 years, which would provide a source of revenue because we don't have to make a payment to the developer following the 2026 originally intended sunset date of the district. And with that, again, our city administrator, Clint Gridley, is here also. We can share additional information.
Very good. Mr. Gridley, please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Weber. Clint Gridley, City Administrator. I think Mayor Ann Burt summarized it well, and this is an important part of our funding package for the improvement and update of Central Park, and I hope the committee will give this due consideration.
If I might ask, what is the size of the increment that you're asking to extend?
So the fund balance, a surplus, fund balance would be approximately $1 million. At the end of the life, which is 2026. And if you allow us to extend it 5 more years, that would be a second $1 million. So we would take the total $2 million toward the Central Park Improvement Project.
Okay, very good, thank you. Members, any questions? Hearing none, final comments, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's funny, Central Park is really not that old. It was only 20 years ago, I think, that it was built. But because of the growth of Woodbury, now the eighth largest city in the state of Minnesota, which still sort of surprises a lot of us, and its role as a hub in the East Metro, it is busting at the seams, if you will, with use from the East Metro community. And so this is an important asset that we're working really hard together as a team to try to make sure is ready to serve the community for the next 20 plus years.
Thank you. And I apologize, you don't really let the author have the final comment. I should have turned to Mr. Sylvia if there was any comments he had.
Mr. Chair, members, the only comment I would make based on my earlier comments is just all TIF laws, special laws require local approval and filing requirements. The duration extension state statute provides that affected local governmental units for duration extensions are the city, the county, and the school district. So for that second request only, those three units would have to approve it for the duration extension to be effective.
Okay. Okay, very good. With that, thank you very much, Senator Kent. Senate file 2976 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Next, we will turn to Senate File 2696, Senator Johnson Stewart. Welcome to the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. Today we are presenting Senate File 2696, which is requesting some special TIF legislation for the City of Plymouth. Our project that we are requesting this special TIF district for is a large redevelopment site, which is completely surrounded by county roads and Interstate 494. We need the TIF district in order to improve the infrastructure around the site, specifically some high-volume road intersections. So this will allow us to plan for some additional transit, intersection roads, et cetera, and possible workforce housing. I have two testifiers with me today. I have Mayor of Plymouth, Plymouth Mayor Jeff Washey, and to answer any questions, I have City Manager Dave Callister. So with that, I'll hand it over to the mayor.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself, Mayor, for the record, and you may proceed.
Jeff Washey, Mayor of the City of Plymouth. And thank you, Senator Johnson Stewart, Chair Weber, and committee members. The city is seeking approval of Senate File 2696 to authorize the creation of a TIF district for redevelopment of the Prudential Financial site to provide funding for necessary public infrastructure improvements. The 75-acre site is currently owned by Prudential, but is in the process of being sold, the building demolished and redeveloped into a mixed-use project that we anticipate will include multifamily housing, retail, and office components. The site is surrounded by three county highways and Interstate 494 and borders the city of Maple Grove to the north. Hennepin County has indicated has no funds available for any current or future improvements to County Road 10, County Road 61, County Road 47, or any of the surrounding intersections. Recently, County Road 47 was turned back from Hennepin County to Plymouth earlier this year. While we feel it is the responsibility of Hennepin County to assist with improvements to their own county roadways, we have been told time and again that they have no funds available, which places Plymouth taxpayers in the precarious position of paying twice county and city taxes for much needed regional infrastructure. An example of how Hennepin County has failed to adequately fund improvements to their own roads in Plymouth is when they completed the recent turn back of County Road 47. As part of that turn back, the county is providing $5 million towards a $30 million project, which amounts to completing an overlay of the existing inferior roadway, which was designed or created about 100 years ago. The city, realizing the current dangerous conditions, had no choice but to move the project forward despite the lack of funding from the county. And the project will create safer roadways that include sidewalks, trails, turning lanes, and roadway shoulders. Another example is the 2019 completion of the County Road 9 bridge over Interstate 494. The 43-year-old deteriorating bridge was in need of replacement to improve safety and eliminate one of the city's most dangerous intersections. Plymouth ended up funding a larger share of the bridge than Hennepin County, even though it was a county highway and not a city street. Given the current and future traffic uses, we anticipate the Prudential redevelopment will necessitate improvements to six intersections surrounding the site with an estimated cost of $5 to $10 million. Five of the six intersections are county intersections. Again, the county has indicated they have no funds for any intersection improvements now or in the future. To construct the necessary roadway improvements surrounding the redevelopment site, we are proposing to establish a TIF district that allows the growth of in a new tax base to assist with funding the infrastructure improvements necessary so as not to place an undue burden on Plymouth taxpayers. The redevelopment site is surrounded by one of the most heavily traveled areas of the community. Annual average daily traffic of the highway surrounding the site include 494 on the west side with 76,000 trips per day, County Road 10 on the north side, 20,600 trips per day, County Road 61 on the east side of 22,200 trips per day, and former County Road 47 on the south side of 11,400 trips per day. Senate File 2696 would enable us to utilize redevelopment to provide a funding solution to correct existing and future regional traffic congestion and provide a much safer transportation network for the thousands of vehicles that travel these routes each and every day. This is a very important issue for our community, and we respectfully request your support and passage, and we look forward to working with Chair Weber, Senator Rest, Senator Johnson Stewart as the bill moves through the process. We have Dave Callister, our city manager, available to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And so, Administrator, you're here purely for questions if they arise. Is that correct? Very good. Just a quick, first we'll go to Senator Chamberlain. He has a question.
Yeah, I have a couple. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first, a clarifying question. I think I'm looking at the right map here. So your desire with this developing this district is to address road work and specifically intersections, correct? Mm-hmm. No,
That's correct.
Is that a yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Head nods don't work. So, and I understand these are county roads, and you would look for county money. You said the county isn't interested. But this is typically a property tax issue, correct? Or a state highway fund issue, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I'm sorry.
Correct.
All right, thank you. So why would you not use that route then? I mean, Plymouth, I grew up in that area and I've been through that area many times in the last many years. Very well off, very developed. Why couldn't you just work that way? That's the first question.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members. We have our state aid allocated because as a growing community, we use that for a lot of newer roads and also renovating existing roads. And as far as the property tax, yes, we could issue a big bond and pay it through that way. But we really face a critical funding gap when Plymouth, you mentioned, you know, we do have a lot of money. We put a lot of money into the system. The half-cent transportation sales tax that was imposed by Hennepin County in 2017, we put in about $6 million a year into that, so we put in well over $25 million into that fund for transportation. None of that money has gone to any roads, and so that creates an obstacle, as well as the leased car sales tax. Hennepin County is disqualified, and Ramsey County are disqualified, mm-hmm. So that's another $15 million that the county could get, so there's some other reasons, but to the answer your question, we could do that, yes, but we're trying to be creative and we're trying to incentivize private investment in this area, and that's the funding situation.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just one more quick comment.
Yes.
So I get it. I mean, there's a lot of pieces to it and the challenges, but as we all know, I mean, TIFs have a specific use for a specific reason, and then those increments generated from there, right, are used to pay this back. And people like myself and Senator Rest and others were very protective of taxpayer dollars, because if those increments and that system doesn't work, then somebody's still hung up with that bill to finish that off. And usually they come back here, right, and they look to get that corrected after a couple of years and something changes. So I thank you for your time and for your patience in answering the questions. I just, these sorts of things, this sort of stuff gets a little bit challenging and difficult, I think, in this area. I understand the desire for creativity and stuff, but it pushes the limits a bit and puts people at risk. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Silvio, any comments from you before we proceed with further questions?
Mr. Chair, members, I would just note that this proposal sort of seeks the blight test exemption and sort of a pooling exemption. I noted that the blight test is a requirement for all redevelopment districts, and that requires that 70% of the area is occupied by buildings, streets, or utilities, and that more than 50% of the buildings be structurally substandard. So the parcels noted in the proposal would be deemed to meet that test. If the committee deems that an exemption from the blight test is appropriate, what's noted in item two on the summary is sort of viewed as a corresponding exemption. Current law also requires that
90% of increment for redevelopment district be used to correct the conditions that allowed for designation of the blighted redevelopment district in the first place. So if there's an exemption from the blight test, it would be appropriate for the committee to go along with that second request as well.
Okay. I noticed that in the bill it talks about improvements to County Road 47. However, it's my understanding that there would be improvements on other county roads surrounding the property as well. Is that correct? At least at the intersections?
Mr. Chair, committee members, yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. And just for purposes, the tract include is totally encased by 494 and the three county roads. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct.
All right. Very good. Further questions, members? If not, final words, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Plymouth is a growing community. I drive by this site every day. I think the city has been very responsible in planning ahead for doing improvements on these are high volume roads. For County Road to have 22,000 vehicles per day is a significant number. And so I applaud their efforts and I very much appreciate your consideration as well as the committee members. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Johnson Stewart. With that, Senate File 2696 will be laid over for possible inclusion. We are going to, for the moment, skip Senate File 3970. Senator Port can't be here today. I believe Senator Rest is going to... Oh, okay. So we'll be handling that for her. Oh, hi. Oh, excuse me. I didn't see you, Senator. You were hiding on me. Very good. We will turn to Senate File 3970, and then we will proceed with 4086 as well, which is Senator Rest's bill. Welcome to the committee, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This might be a good one since she's off.
Yeah, evidently. We are assuming that this bill conforms to all the requirements that you have protected all these years.
Yeah. Would I bring you anything?
I realize. welcome, Senator Rest. You may proceed when you're ready.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and colleagues. Senate File 3970 is a bill brought to you on behalf of constituents by Senator Port, and it is asking for some an extension, and let's just find my it's a little bit quicker than I thought I'd be up here. Of course, I don't have the whole thing. Do you have I don't have the whole thing like this. I need that.
That one brought to you.
All right. Thank you. In recent years, we have had occasions to deal with the challenges of gravel pits in a number of communities in the metropolitan area. And Savage is one of them. We've done TIF for Maple Grove. We've done it a TIF project for that. One in a southern. Mr. Sylvia can help me with the second one that we've done. They're pretty complicated projects, and we often have. The cities will encounter difficulties or challenges in meeting the regular rules of TIF to start with, and they come to us for special legislation, and then as the project develops, often we will get a request for an extension of one or two provisions in the TIF law to meet unexpected challenges that have come up. And we experienced those before during the recession about 10 years ago, and we're finding that there are some
unexpected challenges now at the end of the pandemic. We, in this bill, there is a request to extend the five-year rule, which is a huge part of the TIF law that you'll see repeated over and over again as cities need a bit of extra time to meet the requirements of the rule, which has all kinds of challenges for getting a project done, getting it started, and meeting the timeline, and then subsequent to that, also the six-year rule. We approved this district in 2014, so it has been around now for eight years. And I know the other one is one for this year from Senator Pratt dealing with Shakopee. So those are the three. So these are kind of familiar projects in a sense, in that they end up with the same kinds of challenges to make them successful. The second request here, and I'll let the testifier speak to that, is to allow the district to include three new areas that would enlarge the geographic area of the district. Generally, if a city comes in or a redevelopment authority comes in and they say, we want to reduce the area, that is not a matter for special legislation. But in this instance, they want to add to the geographic area. So those are the two things that are brought up in 3970. It was certified in June of 2016. It's required to decertify in 2039. So I'll let the testifier from on behalf of the city talk about the project then.
Very, very good. On our schedule, we have City Administrator Brad Larson. I believe he is testifying online. Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Weber. Thank you to you and the committee members. My name is Brad Larson. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Savage. I believe you have Mr. Weisberg present there at the committee as well. I'll let him get into the more of the technical aspects of the request, but I will tell you from a committee or a community standpoint, we are supportive of this request. They are not requesting to change the larger geographic boundaries than we already contemplated and we approved. This would allow them to move forward with the different phases of the development that we approved when this first came before us and when it first was approved for special legislation. Specifically, the community of Savage is supportive of this because the project has already started and we have a quarter to about a third of the homes built here on Big Sky Estates, which is what the development is called. And we would like to see the rest of the development be completed because it's going to complete a couple things for the residents in the community. Number one, since we have about 100 homes built already, they're only using one to two accesses in and out of this development. And as development occurs, more development occurs, that's going to finish the entrances and exits to this development that we would like to see and really what the development needs to function properly. The second thing is this is the City of Savage. If you're not aware of the City of Savage, we're almost at fully built out. We're hemmed in by communities all around us. We don't have a lot of green space left. This will be the last area where we will see a larger park in the City of Savage. And it's not going to happen unless this development happens. So we've been planning for this for actually several decades. and we'd like to see that completed. And then third, even though we don't have the school district with us, I can tell you that the school district would be supportive of this. The school district built their new elementary school in this development with the anticipation that more residents would be moving in and around it. So not only did they build their brand new elementary school here, I think for their planning purposes, they anticipated more development here. So what I'd leave you with is that this request is not increasing the budget of the project. It's not increasing the size of the project. It's really just extending the timelines to finish this very complex project. And with that, I will turn it back over to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Larson. Next, we'll turn to Brian Weisberg, property owner, and please identify yourself for the record. You may proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Weber. My name is Brian Weisberg. I'm actually an attorney for the property owner. I practice with Siegel Brill. And I would like to add on to what Brad Larson indicated is the basis for our request for extension of two deadlines in this bill. We think of ourselves as a success story for the soil correction special legislation. As Senator Rest indicated, this project has been going forward for since 2014, and approximately 100 acres of the previous gravel pit has been reclaimed. As Mr. Larson indicated, that reclaimed area houses the newest elementary school in the city of, or in the Prior Lake Savage School District, and also 100 houses. The remaining phase will include additional entry-level single-family housing and complete infrastructure that the city of Savage deems necessary in order to provide for utilities to neighboring communities and interior roads. Also, as Mr. Larson indicated, there will be a large community park as part of this second phase. Finally, to echo the points that Senator Rust raised, it's important to identify what this bill does not do. It does not authorize the creation of additional TIF districts, nor give the city authority to increase the amount of TIF increment authorized already. It merely allows us to redefine the boundaries of TIF District 2. As the project developed topographical issues on the ground and soil correction issues that we were unaware of at the time caused us to have to relocate the location of some of the developed areas, and that resulted in lot lines that straddled the two districts, and this extension of the five-year rule will allow us to redraw those boundary lines. And the second extension is to provide us with additional time to complete in-district improvements and to extend that period of time. So to close, I would just ask that you support the amendments, these technical corrections to allow deadlines, and also to thank Senator Rest for pinch hitting for us today and presenting this bill on our behalf. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Weisberg. Mr. Sylvia, comments?
Mr. Chair, I would have no additional comments. I think the testifier and Senator Rest indicated that this proposal is just modifying these two sort of five-year periods, the five-year rule, and then the request to expand the boundaries. I would have nothing additional to add.
Very good. Any questions, members?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Rest.
I do have a question just to make sure that I understand. Mr. Sylvia, in line 2.8, which is a reference to the five-year rule, why is this not a general rule, a general law change? It says the five-year rule is extended to 11 years for any district. What is, how am I reading that incorrectly?
Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, and members, so this, this is amending a special law that was enacted for the city. And when we mention any district, the original authorization allowed for the establishment of multiple TIF districts, including the new soil deficiency district and whatnot. So this extension would apply to other districts, but only limited to the city of Savage's legislative request.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sylvia. I think we need to be really careful when we're doing provisions like this to make sure that they are specific to the special legislation, and we just need to have a sharp pencil.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Rest. And if there are no further questions, final comments.
Well, I'm just very pleased to work with Senator Port and the city of Savage as they are working with their school district, the community, in supporting the orderly completion of this project. And it seems to be going along. It just needs a little bit more time and a little bit more flexibility.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Rest. With that, Senate File 3970 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And next, Senate File 4086, Senator Rest.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
And you have an amendment, I believe.
Yes, I do. Mr. Sylvia, is it the A2 or the A4?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, the A4 is the most updated amendment that replaced the A2.
Then, Mr. Chairman, as an author's amendment, I offer the A4.
Very good. Senator Klein moves the A4 amendment. And with that, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. Thank you, Senator Rest. You may proceed.
Thank you. And I'm not going, since it's a long page in line, we're going to go back to it so that people are comfortable with the language of it. But for right now, I'm just going to begin with a general description of the bill. And I recommend you looking at the document that's been presented by the state auditor as a summary of what is proposed here. By way of introduction, however, we have been ever since I've been involved in TIF legislation, whether it's special legislation or general law changes, some of which have been more popular with local governments than others over the years. But we've always tried to be as specific as possible. And what happens sometimes over the years has been language that has been introduced without looking at the whole body of tax increment law. And so we end up with some inconsistencies, lack of definitions of some terms, and we just kind of plod along. We have tried in the past to regularize, I would call it, the tax increment financing laws, and we just didn't get there. But with this state auditor and her staff, they have done an amazing job of reaching out to all the special interest groups, all the city groups. You have a letter in your packet signed by the League of Cities and the Metro Cities supporting the changes that are being proposed here. Anybody who wanted to weigh in on what the state auditor was doing with clarifying three very important areas of the TIF laws were invited to do so. And at any point where an amendment or a further specification was indicated and suggested, it was always well received, shared with all the parties involved, and that brings us to Senate File 4086. What it deals with is the definitions of what is an administrative expense. That's the first major topic, and that is the subject in section one. Cities have offered justifications for including one thing or another as an administrative expense, and even in this bill, even though there is a list of what can be count as an administrative expense for the use of the increment, there's still that catch-all phrase, and there may be other legitimate reasons. They'll just have to be examined either by the legislature or in the audit that's done of all TIF districts by the state or the review, the report that has to be filed with the state auditor when that is reviewed. If there are questions that arise from the state auditor's office to ask the cities about. So even though this gets much more specific, there still is a bit of room for some flexibility. But what I like in particular about it is where they say there are some things that aren't administrative expenses, like building a building. That's not an administrative expense. It has to be something else. It's not amount. This is on page 2, line 5 and 6. It is not does not include money that is used for the purchase of land and building. It doesn't include amounts paid to contractors or others providing materials and services and so forth. So it's not just, and it also doesn't apply for PILT payments. It doesn't apply. An administrative expense is not money, taxes paid in lieu of other taxes. So I'm really appreciative of that, and it. It also refers to, it doesn't deal with county costs, and that is in 223 and 224. So I think that's a little bit more detailed explanation of one of the major areas here, and I believe that they have brought really fine attention to the other two major areas that are included in your summary and that are in the first paragraph of the overview, and that is something that we call pooling, which is where increment, a portion of the increment, a percentage of increment from one property can be used to help meet the bond requirements or other requirements, financial requirements that may not be able to be met by another building in that project. So we allow a certain percentage of the increment, which of course is the amount of taxes paid above the original value of the property. And I will let the state auditor's office talk about that. And then we have a category here called violations. What does it mean when you violate the TIF law? There are much of the rest of it is dealing with going beyond the scope of the 5-year rule. That's in Section 7. Section 6 and 7 deals with the 5-year rule, and you've just heard almost every special legislation that comes in on TIF is looking for some modification of the 5-year rule, keeping in mind that the vast majority of TIF districts have no problem meeting the 5-year rule. So there's, in this bill, there's clarification for what it means, but it is not saying, well, as some have done, let's get rid of the 5-year rule. Let's just abolish it and kick out the 6-year rule and we'll just go along our merry way. Most TIF districts across the state and the cities can meet them. But there are there are relationships between the 5 and 6 year rule, the 5 year in particular, as I understand it, and I learn more about PIF every day, that affects the pooling. So that that is kind of in the crosshairs with looking at both the 5 year rule and then the allowances for pooling. So without further ado, that's I think a general legislator's perspective on what is being proposed here. I think it's the cities and all of the development authorities that are permitted to use TIF under the law will be end up being very grateful that they have some specific directions on how to proceed in their TIF districts, independent of any special legislation that comes. Because, as I asked about before with Mr. Sylvia, well, is this general law or is this special law? So you have to be careful that you go to the general law section when you want to deal with the TIF districts that are across the state and not mistake what is said for a special law, not take that as the rule for the general law. So with that, if I may turn to my testifier.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Welcome to the committee. We have a representative from the State Auditor's Office. Please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Sure. Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Jason Nord, and I'm the TIF Director at the Office of the State Auditor. And I'd like to thank Senator Rest, along with the other authors, Senator Weber, Senator Klein, and Senator Dziedzic, for carrying this legislation, which was our effort to try to address a number of the ambiguities that we've run into over the years, especially as Senator Rest has summarized, related to administrative expenses, pooling, especially the 5 and 6 year rule, and violations. And so Senator Rest discussed some of the clarifications to the definition of the administrative expenses. One other little item to highlight related to the administrative expenses that we're addressing in this bill is when you purchase a property with tax increments, the lease and sale proceeds that come from those properties are considered to be tax increments because the property was purchased with tax increments. And there's always been this struggle about do those maintenance expenditures for maintaining the property, are those limited, are those administrative expenses, and are they limited by the 10% limit on admin? So we've addressed that to clarify that those are indeed admin expenses, but allow that when those maintenance costs are paid from lease proceeds, that those expenditures aren't subject to that limit on administrative expenses. The one other area that I would touch on is the 6 year rule. The 6 year rule is a corollary to the 5 year rule. The 5 year rule says these are the things that are considered in district. So in other words, if you identify new obligations or new expenditures after the first 5 years, though any of those new obligations or new expenditures would be considered out-district expenditures. So the 5 year rule is about defining what's in district versus what's pooling. The 6 year rule says once you have enough increment, generally speaking, to pay off your in-district obligations, the district has to be decertified. So a lot of TIF districts actually decertify early, well before their statutory maximums, because they've received enough money to pay off their in-district obligations. But that section of law has contained a lot of ambiguities. And so we've really appreciated bringing together cities, counties, schools, Department of Revenue, and others to give us feedback on clarifications that we're suggesting here. We've really expanded the 6 year rule to identify a lot more detail and a lot more clarifications as to how that should work, especially with respect to pay as you go obligations, which only obligate increment as taxes are paid. And so with that, and the last little bit that we didn't touch on too much is the violations clarifications. There's a statute in the TIF Act that identifies how to remedy any violations. And there was just some technical kind of cleanups to some odd sentences or some obsolete language in some of those provisions. So those cleanups Those provisions are mostly technical. And with that, if you'd like further description about any of the sections or the amendment, or if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them as best I can. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. Mr. Sylvia, comments?
Mr. Chair, the only comments I would make jokingly is the grammatical flaw corrected in Section 4 and the mathematical flaw corrected in Section 8 were enacted in the 1990s prior to my joining the legislature. So I don't take any credit for those flaws.
Very good. Members, any questions? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rust. I appreciate the thoroughness with which you are approaching this complexity. And in our packets, we see a letter of support from cities and counties. We're hearing about the report from the auditor and the reflection of that report in this amendment and in this proposal. And we're not hearing from anybody who has any opposition, which could be a really good signal. And I'm just wondering if you can share with us anything that you've heard people have concerns about the proposal, anything that we should be contemplating in addition to what has been presented to us today, which is a pretty uniform front.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Rest.
And Senator Murphy, earlier on in the state auditor's development of this bill of clarifications, mostly there were concerns raised by representatives from cities and development authorities, and that was my point in mentioning that they brought those concerns to the state auditor and the group he was working with, and they were dealt with, and the objections faded away because they saw that they were being listened to, that their experience. The people that we're dealing with this were extremely experienced with being consultants or representatives in the city government themselves with how TIF actually works. And it's really to the credit of the state auditor and certainly listening to Mr. Nord here that there are no objections to this bill. Except if maybe someone would come forward and say, well, you know, I really liked all that vagueness. I really like that a lot, and I'd rather go back to it being vague. We're really not hearing that anymore, and I think the parties concerned realize that the specificity, the guidelines that they're given are really, really helpful in the long run. In the use of this one tool for economic development writ large, I mean, that means redevelopment and all kinds of districts that are under this, that they have, the vast majority of cities, other than very small ones, make use of this tool to provide jobs, to reclaim land, and to overall contribute to the economic well-being of their city. So this is a good job that the state auditor is doing for them.
And Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rust, and to the auditor's office. You're showing us the art of legislating, and I appreciate that.
Sure.
Very good. With that, if there are no further questions, any final comments, Senator Rest?
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Very good. With that, Senate File 4086 will be laid over for possible inclusion, as amended. Next, we'll turn to Senate File 3980, Senator Latz. I believe Senator Latz is online. And welcome to the committee, Senator. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here today on behalf of the city of Hopkins with a TIF request, and on behalf of the city, Kirsten Alvarum from the city staff is present to explain the request.
Okay, very good. We will turn to Ms. Alvarum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and Senator Latz.
TIF is, as you know, one of the few tools cities have to assist in the cost of redevelopment. And we are continuing to experience pressures on development that have been driven recently by rising construction costs and interest rates. And we're finding small gaps in projects that we would like the flexibility of TIF to be able to address. We're asking for a minor modification to TIF District 2-11, which is a redevelopment district that will terminate in December of 2029, so there's 7 years remaining. We do have outstanding bonds, so there's no opportunity that this district could be decertified early. And we have used pooling from this district for some key projects, including for environmental contamination cleanup on a recent redevelopment project. We have other projects that are in the process of being put together. And again, we're finding small gaps driven by rising construction costs. Our ask is really twofold. One is to remove an existing restriction that is limiting, is more limiting than state law. And that is for the pooling for redevelopment to not be restricted to 20% for this district, but rather to be the same as state law at 25%. Our second ask is that the legal pooling amount be increased by 5% from 25 to 30%, which would give the city an additional approximately $1 million to use for redevelopment projects going forward. As you may know, Hopkins is a very historic city. We were developed at the turn of the century. We're 4 square miles in footprint and our redevelopment needs are great. We do have limited tools and we are experiencing growing pressure to redevelop some very obsolete sites in Hopkins. And this would give us the ability to really right size the assistance for the projects that the community wants without establishing new TIF districts. And we ask for your support of this legislation.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Elverum. Mr. Sylvia, comments.
Mr. Chair and members, I would just draw your attention to the history column of the summary. There's been some changes to the pooling limitations that were originally enacted over the years, and I've just summarized those. The previous legislation was modified in 2003, 2008, and 2019. All were either limiting or expanding the original pooling limitations that applied to the enacting legislation.
Okay, very good. Members, any questions? Hearing none, Senator Latz, final comment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Hopkins, as Ms. Elverum indicated, is a fully developed city. It's very small in geographic footprint, it's a highly residential city, so it has a more limited commercial industrial tax base. To support their development and redevelopment needs. They are under a lot of pressure and they have aging infrastructure as well. And so they have turned to the legislature on occasion for guidance and assistance in facilitating their long-term planning and they're a very proactive community. They don't wait until everything's falling apart to try to make plans and to handle what they are doing. And again, here today, they're seeking the state's assistance to enable them to continue with their work in maintaining the community. We ask for the support of this committee and the Senate.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Latz. And with that, Senate File 3980 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
And we turn to Senate File 4470, Senator Knish. Welcome to the committee, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee. I'm here to present Senate File 4470 as amended by the DE amendment, and
okay.
This will...
Let's deal with okay. the amendment right away.
Okay.
We have the A1 amendment. Senator Klein moves the author's amendment, A1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. Senator, you may proceed to the amendment and the bill.
Thank you so much. So this amendment will allow the city of Fridley to use a portion of their excess tax increment from its TIF District 20 to help fund the city's current housing rehabilitation program. Fridley has a very serious aging housing stock, and much rehab is needed for these homes. It's a challenge beyond the means of too many of the residents because Fridley's median income is only about 62% of the metro area median. The population of Fridley is quickly changing. It's becoming more and more diverse, but it is also becoming homes to aging elderly folks. Our longtime residents are growing older and are the people most likely to struggle with those aging and deteriorating homes. The city has responded well and been good stewards by creating an aggressive program to rehab homes as well as provide loans and grants, but the program will be out of funds by the year 2024. We have a compelling historic reason to allow this exception to the general TIF law for this particular TIF district. Fridley District is a unique district. It right now covers a once notorious and now cleaned up Superfund site that for decades plagued the city and hampered its growth and progress. It was on the list of worst national Superfund sites, and for years the community really feared that it was going to pollute the city's water system. The site was eventually cleaned up, but the progress of the city spent more than $4.5 million of its own resources, as well as $15 million in GEO funds, as it worked with the PCA, the EPA, and the polluters, including the U.S. Navy, to remediate and then develop the site. During that cleanup, Fridley created the TIF District 20 to assist the economic development once that site was pollution-free, and it is a thriving new area of the Fridley community. Fortunately, it is now producing tax increment, and since this is the very district that created problems for Fridley's growth since the 1960s, and since the city contributes significant resources to assist in the cleanup, we would like, and we think it's only fair that Fridley be allowed, at least for a time, to use part of this excess increment to help solve its aging housing stock crisis. And so I would urge you members to support the amended SF 4470. And here with me, I have Fridley Council Member Stephen Eggert to describe the city's aging housing stock crisis.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Eggert. Please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Stephen Eggert. I'm a council member for the city of Fridley, but I'm also a long-term resident of the city of Fridley. I moved into this community in the early 60s and remained here. I've served on the, prior to being on the council, I've served on the Housing Redevelopment Authority for 9 years, and it was during the creation and development of this TIF district. This district and the redevelopment of these two Superfund sites were an extreme success, primarily because of very good timing and stars lining up to make it happen. The progress of this project occurred in 5 years compared to a plan of a 10-year program, so it went very quickly. The valuation is 40% greater than projected. Financially, very wisely, 5% revenue notes were converted to general obligation bonds, resulting in this significant savings in this area. The HRA and the city recognizes the huge need in our mature first-ring community in maintaining our housing stock. And that stock is well documented for its age and condition. Basically built out in the 50s and 60s as affordable housing. And in fact, it was my family that moved here into that affordable housing. So I'm a firsthand witness to the success of this TIF district and the community needs. The additional savings in this district would be used to supplement the current housing programs across the entire city, for which the demand exceeds the supply of funds. For example, our senior loan program, as was mentioned, we have a significant senior living here in the city, was sold out in February of this year. We also have another example. We have over 400 mobile homes in need of significant repair. Fridley would be very thankful for everything that can be done with this bill to help its aging housing stock. Thank you for the time to speak and your consideration of this request.
Thank you, Mr. Eggert. And do you wish to testify, or are you an information person?
Mr. Chairman, I'm an information person, so I enjoy coming back to keep an eye on everybody. I serve in this room for many years, so.
Okay. And very good. Mr. Sylvia, any comments?
Mr. Chair, members, I would just note that excess increment is typically an increment that is greater than what was authorized or needed for the district. And also just note that last year the legislature authorized sort of a pilot program for the cities of Minnetonka, Richfield, and St. Louis Park to temporarily transfer increment into the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. This proposal does not do that, but it does require some annual financial reporting to the state auditor for any increment that's transferred to the Housing and Redevelopment Authority for these housing programs, as well as requires two legislative reports in 2024 and 2026, which is modeled after the language that we included last year, which must provide some information to the tax committee about how the transferred increment was spent. And as I noted, that's language that was modeled after last year's pilot program.
Very good. Thank you. Members, questions? Senator Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question either for the testifiers or for Mr. Sylvia. Do we know the dollar amount of the excess increment that we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Klein, I do not know the specifics of how much increment the city is asking to.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I am Jim Casserly. I'll leave a card with the committee. And I'm legal counsel for the HRA. It would generate somewhere between $2.5 and $4 million.
Okay, very good. Any further questions, members? Seeing none, Senator Knish, final words.
Well, thank you for hearing this bill and recognizing the fact that our community of Fridley has been a good steward of the funds that they have been given in the past and have been very diligent in creating the kind of community and housing stock that is going to provide jobs and services across the metro area as well as the state. And so I would very much appreciate your support and moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. With that, Senate File 4086 Senate File 4470 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
That brings us to an end of our bills for today. Members, I would just comment that obviously we'll be preparing a property tax report. I do intend to hear bills that are concerning communities' loss of revenue due to utility plant closings and that type of thing yet as well. And so we will be meeting next week. And with that, this meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.